Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Come on, Rudy.
What?
Come on. We call it
the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game.
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Friscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back. We are certainly ringing in our 100th anniversary here with a bang this week, of course. We hit episode 100 Wednesday night. We brought you the headlines for 101 Thursday night, and that was a special surprise, a treat for all the great Nation members who support us. We're going to deliver you episode 102 this weekend, and this is Royal Rumble Listomania. You didn't think you were getting it, but you are. Just for you, Safazio, because I know how much you wanted it. And of course, let me bring in my PIC so we can get this thing rolling. And that's Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing? I'm tired of talking to you this week, by the way.
I know, Jesus God.
I saw you Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We did three podcasts this week. We're an overload.
Yeah, my God. But then come a few weeks, and I won't talk to you for probably 5 weeks. you might have one podcast in 6 weeks. But as always, my PIC, it is a pleasure, and welcome everyone to number 102 of the Place to Be podcast. And as my PIC mentioned, a special gift for the loyalists. Everyone thought we were only going to do our normal two, but not at all. For indeed, in episode 102, it is time to rumble.
It's time for the Royal Rumble.
Yes. Haku! Yes.
Kato! You know, I'm thinking maybe for the end, once we announce what our third list is, maybe I'll do Vince McMahon and read them all out for everyone.
Oh, I think that'd be tremendous, yeah.
So, of course, we are going to deliver you three lists tonight, and two are pretty standard for this show, but the third is a little funky.
Yes.
The first one we're going to do is random.
Just before you say that, though, we're doing a little bit of a change this time to kind of make things shorter. I mean, we will complete the quartet of Big Four. If anybody wants to request a Unforgiven Listomania, you're going to have to ask for it. But unlike the previous one, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, and Survivor Series, instead of doing each of us doing a list, we kind of try to tighten it up a bit, give us more chance to talk and kind of explain about the matches and people. We condensed them with the law of averages, if you will, and put them into one condensed list to give us more time to talk. So I just wanted to let everyone know that. So.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's get started.
All right, yeah. The first one we're going to do is ranking the world title matches from every Royal Rumble that had one. Now, we're not counting ECW title as a world title for this purpose of this list, so it's just the World or WWE. And we also did not count the 1992 Royal Rumble. We just felt it was too hard to rank in this kind of list because it's just a totally different animal. So these are pretty much just the standard world title matches. So why don't you go ahead and start us off, Scott?
Okay, I'll do the odd matches. There's 29 of them total. Mm-hmm. I'll do the odds. You do the evens. Mm-hmm. At number 29, the bottom of the barrel, and it's kind of sad to put this match on it because it's two guys we both really like.
Yeah.
And number 29, the bottom of the list, is Kurt Angle versus Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight Championship in 2006. This match is a mess, and I don't know if it was maybe Kurt was injured or Mark Henry and him just didn't have any chemistry, but, I mean, that whole show was kind of a disaster anyway. The flow really didn't go very well anyway, and with the Rumble, if this match was last instead of the Rumble, when it probably shouldn't have been, but this match just never really got going. Kurt was not at his best.
No.
He would make it up the following month, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But this match just, I know it was hard for you to put your boys, one of your boys' matches this low, but it just
well,
wasn't.
I got a couple issues with this one. One is that they shoehorned it in at the end of the card, so they do all the stupid Undertaker pyrotechnic show, and having the ring collapse and all that, so that they forced it to the end when it really should not have been anywhere near that spot. It should have been earlier in the show for sure. And also, the problem was they had just come off the whole thing with Batista forfeiting the title because of injury. And what they really should have done to spice this Rumble up is put the SmackDown or the world title up for grabs in the Rumble. I think I remember talking about that at the time with you back in 06.
Yep.
And it could have been something to add a little special intrigue. And instead, they did the whole thing where Kurt hastily turned face after being a heel on Raw, jumped to SmackDown and won the Battle Royal. And so he was just kind of a tepid face at this point. And Henry, his main allure as a heel had been in a feud with Batista. So all of a sudden you got this feud that wasn't really a feud. And it was just kind of awkward. So, it was quick and kind of blah. And like I said, it was really only there to set up Undertaker's return. So,
right. So, yeah, I mean, and the other thing about that is you meant hastily put together. If you remember, Insiders, the first guy, after Batista got hurt, of course, he really got hurt. He tore his tricep, I think. Mm-hmm. The original plan was for Shawn Michaels to move to SmackDown and win
right.
the title.
Yep.
But Shawn was, of course, and still is very heavily into his church. And I believe he teaches on Tuesday nights or some class or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't want to work Tuesday nights. So they kind of... Kurt was the backup plan, which I think kind of pissed him off, and that almost kind of led to his leaving later on in the year. But
yes.
So there's the bottom of the barrel. I know what many people were thinking was the worst match ever. Don't worry, that one's coming. But no, this one is actually much worse. And even the match you really think is bad is not even the next one. Tell them what the next match is.
Yes, the next one takes us to 2004, where Brock Lesnar defends against Hardcore Holly, a match that really had no place on pay-per-view, even buried as a Rumble undercard match. And not really headlining any kind of show. It still should have been a SmackDown match. The only reason they gave it to Holly was almost like a thank you for his long tenure. And, of course, he had come back from that injury where he tried to sandbag Brock, and Brock ended up dropping him on his neck and busting his neck up, and Holly was out for a while. He came back in late 03, and they tried to make him into kind of a serious main event player, and it just didn't take. After years of this guy being a jobber, it can work for a guy like Mark Henry, who can just get over by being a badass. But for a guy like Holly that doesn't really have that in him, it was hard to take him seriously. And they had like Brock acting like spooked by him and freaking out when he was around. And it was just kind of silly. Brock had been
right.
booked as this monster world champion. All of a sudden, he's frightened of Hardcore Holly. So, and the match itself didn't even end up being that good. It was a long rest hold in the middle, and it was just really out of place.
Yeah, it was absolutely. Hardcore Holly again, a career mid-carder, and what's sad is you didn't feel bad for Holly because him being a dickhead kind of cost him the injury anyway. He was being an ass like he always is. And that's what got him. That's what got him hurt. So it's really not even it's his own fault that he got hurt. You know, it's kind of the same thing when, not really. It's different than when Kurt Angle broke his arm, because that was truly an accident. But
right,
But Hardcore was trying to be a douchebag and he paid the price for it. So you didn't even feel bad for him for everybody that knew about it. So anyway, there's number 28, and here it is, folks. You've been waiting for it. At number 27 on the list of the all-time Royal Rumble title matches, it is indeed. From 2003 in Boston, Triple H and Scott Steiner for the World Heavyweight Championship. The reason this match is not last is because it's actually entertaining in a comical kind
right.
of a car accident kind of way.
Yes.
You know, it was not pretty. It was a colossal disaster, but it was like you're laughing your ass off watching this big, blown-up, jacked-up son of a bitch throwing 27 belly-to-back suplexes, and it's just such a mess. And Triple H, who's usually pretty good at kind of helping out, just he wasn't even into it, and Flair on the outside trying to jazz up the energy level. It was just a freaking disaster. And coming off a total antithesis, right? This match was after, I think. Yeah. Coming after a match that obviously will be further up this card.
No, list. I thought it was before.
No, our buddy there, the Lithuanian lump there, Matt Rotella, who was at the show, I believe told me that the other match was before this one. Pretty sure.
I'll double check.
And I think this match and then the Rumble was last.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong.
It was the other way around?
Yeah, of course he's wrong. He was there live and he still can't get it right.
Yeah,
he's
a dope. An idiot.
No, this was first, and then, yeah, because you're saying, like, this went on, and then the other one went on and just, like, completely embarrassed them.
Destroyed it, yeah. And we all know, I'm pretty sure you probably know what that match is, and we'll get to that match a little bit later. But, so
this
at number 27. Yeah. Oh, go
ahead. I agree with you. The match had some perverse entertainment, and it was just booked all wrong. They should never put Scott Steiner in a long match like that coming off an injury. He had been, you know, obviously didn't have the conditioning yet for it, but Triple H was in his Ric Flair-style NWA long-ass matches phase, so kind of backfired on him here. But, yeah, you get the perverse entertainment of watching the match die on pay-per-view, and the crowd turned on it immediately.
Yeah.
With a lame ending. Okay, number 26.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to just 1 year ago when Miz took on Randy Orton. I can't really say this match was bad. I honestly don't even remember it that well. I just know it was kind of – I remember it being blah and kind of bland, and they didn't seem to have much chemistry between those two at the time. So, actually, you know, let's just lump these next two in together. Number 25 as well is Sheamus and Randy Orton from 2010, because I think that was the same way. It had Orton challenging, you know, back-to-back years against the Young Gun that was kind of shoehorned into the title picture.
Right.
Two guys that maybe weren't really ready for that kind of match, I guess, because it obviously came off that way to me. Orton just didn't seem to have great chemistry with either guy at the time, and both matches were just kind of there.
Yeah, I don't – they're both kind of equal. I like the Miz match a little bit more, but because I think he was actually the hotter heel. Sheamus was a major upset, and I think a lot of it was because, you know, he was Triple H's boy, so they kind of wanted to give him a little push, a little nudge. And, of course, he had a big upset when he beat Cena at TLC that month before, but there was just there was nothing there between him and Orton. I think if he had that match now, I think the match would be tremendous.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But back then it was, and the same thing with Miz and Orton. Miz at least was hot. Their chemistry wasn't that great either. And it really wasn't Orton's fault. I mean, again, I think they kind of slapped him together just to have a match on the card. But again, after a year, you put these guys in the ring and 10 times better. But yeah, these two matches from the last 2 years, they're just kind of there. I mean, you could watch them again, maybe formulate your own opinion. But I'm telling you, I don't think you're going to get much more out of it than we did. So
no.
All right, at number 24, kind of shifting here now, I'm doing the evens. At number 24 is a match that I think a lot of people thought on paper was going to be really good, but just didn't have that something. And that was Bret Hart defending the title, the WWE Championship, WWF Championship, against The Undertaker in 1996. Long match, right? Almost like 27 minutes, I think, something like that.
Yeah, and it hurt me to put this low. Like, I kept, when I was doing my list, I kept trying to find a spot for it, and I just couldn't. I mean, I kept looking at it. I'm like, it was just really boring, I remember. And
it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I wanted to like it. I've watched it a couple times, you know, throughout the years. And, like, I always want to like it. And it's just, I just can't get into it. And that match was, 28-28. So, and then, of course, it ends in a DQ, which makes things even worse as well. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the whole thing with Diesel coming in at the end. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people thought. And I'm sure Brett doesn't want to hear this, but a lot of people thought he was kind of tanking because he knew he was, you know,
right,
jobbing
this
for Shawn.
His little 2 month lame duck era.
Yeah, everyone knew he was going to job to Shawn at WrestleMania, so they thought he was kind of. I just can't see Brett doing that. It just doesn't seem like his nature. But I just think it just wasn't booked very well, and it was way too long. It was at least 9 minutes too long. This match could have probably gotten done in like maybe 17 minutes.
And they go on to have much better matches the next year, but here they just didn't have that. Chemistry, and Taker was still kind of working the slower style a little bit before he really, although it's funny because who would have thought his match with Diesel at WrestleMania would be better than this one, but I guess, you know, we won't talk too much about this because we're going to be coming up on it sooner than later in our vintage vaults, so
yes,
we
exactly.
will save the rest of the Venom for then.
Yeah.
Number 23, we go to 2009, John Cena and JBL. I remember heading into this one, and we actually talked about this the other night in the podcast, and I thought JBL was going to win that match and to set up the WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels. It seemed like they were heading that way. But this is the one where Shawn was in his corner. They were doing the whole thing where he owned him because Shawn had blown all his money or whatever. And lost it in investments, Ponzi schemes, or whatever the hell was going on.
I don't know what it was either.
Cena was coming off kind of a weird year in 08 and even kind of weirder 09. So, you know, it's just a match between those two. The storyline was there. And again, another match I don't really remember a ton about, but I remember it just being kind of okay.
Yeah, there wasn't much to this match either. Obviously, they weren't sure. It did add some intrigue as to who'd win the Rumble, which, of course, would be won by Orton. But that would be leading, of course, to the match against Triple H, who would eventually have the title. That was kind of weird. Like, Cena had the belt. Wait, Cena had the title? I don't remember this.
Cena had the title, and JBL challenged him.
Right. So when did Triple H win the belt? In the chamber? Oh, yeah, in the chamber. That's right. He won in the chamber. Okay. So really, obviously, this match was put together just to put it on the card because looking ahead, these two had nothing to do with the title. So it was very, very strange. And, of course, Cena would go on to – he would actually kind of go to SmackDown for a brief time because he would end up feuding with Edge and The Big Show, and they would have a triple threat. So the whole thing was so convoluted.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Really, the whole early 09 was very, very weird.
Yeah, it was very herky-jerky. And like, so these two guys, they had the match was for the title, but in the whole scope of things, these two had nothing to do with what the title would be doing 2 months later. So it was just kind of in there. Chemistry-wise, I mean, obviously these two do work kind of well together. If you remember, they're awesome. You know, the match at WrestleMania 21 was eh, and then they had the great I Quit match Judgment Day that couple months later. They didn't have that good a chemistry, but it was still not a bad match. But
right.
The problem there was the storytelling wasn't there because the two had nothing going on with each other. So it was very weird. It was very weird. At number 19 is another match involving JBL and Kurt Angle, who we talked about earlier. And that's the triple threat for the WWE Championship in Fresno in 2005 between Kurt Angle, The Big Show, and JBL. Not a bad match. I remember it seemed at this point you were starting to get into JBL as champion. It took long enough.
Wait, hold on.
Are
you using the same list I'm using?
I am using the list that is. I'm using the list. Oh, maybe you changed it. Did you move it? Because I'm using the list that's in the in our board. So let me. You changed. Okay, you changed it. Okay, my bad. I'm sorry. Let me change. I had another list in front of me. All right, at number 22. We moved that up. Okay, at number 22 is The Undertaker versus Yokozuna in 1994, which of course my PIC saw live. I actually liked the match until the end. And then you had, you know, 8 million friggin' heels come in, and the whole thing was just so convoluted. And then our buddy Jim got to see Marty Jannetty's ass in front of him. And it was such a – histrionics-wise, it's fun, but a lot of people make fun of it. But, you know, the match was there simply to give Yoko a big bump heading into WrestleMania and to put Taker on vacation for, 8 months or whatever. So right. That's pretty much all the match is for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum. I have you know, very high regard for this show just because I was there live and so many great memories. And that match, like you said, was fine until the end. The end was a mess, obviously. But, I mean, it is what it is. You know, we've dissected it in the past. And, you know, I don't think it's the worst Rumble title match ever. I don't think it's the worst match ever, like some people do. But I couldn't really justify putting it much higher than the others on this list.
No, I agree. I agree. Okay. Do you want me to...
No, I got it. So number 21, we go to 2005 for Triple H versus Randy Orton. Of course, this was the culmination of their feud after Orton was kicked out of Evolution. Triple H had beaten him for the title at Unforgiven, and then Orton gets his rematch here. And of course, this match was the original one that was penciled in for WrestleMania. As you recall, Batista started getting over on his own. The crowd forced them to change their plans, and Orton got his title match here instead of at Mania, and it would actually turn heel about a month after this show. So
right.
The face turn obviously flopped. The match, it was actually not bad and it was going along fine. And then Orton did that whole weird thing where he got the concussion during the match, storyline wise. And for like the second half of the match, he's just kind of stumbling around with glazed eyes.
Yeah.
As Triple H just kind of beats on him and then pins him. So it was an interesting thing they went for there. And really, this was just a way to keep Triple H strong heading into the match with Batista.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people – this was the one year where listening to the fans kind of bit WWE in the ass because the first half of the year, the crowds were cheering for Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, after his win over Foley at Backlash and kind of keeping the IC title, the great match that he had with Edge at Vengeance. And I think they kind of went, oh, well, these guys kind of like Orton. Let's make him world champion. And then he beats Benoit. And the minute that happens, then it goes right down the toilet. Because they didn't give him a chance to build. Unlike what Batista did, which is slowly with his little mannerisms, his little smirks, and kind of the way the savoir faire with which he carried himself.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just done in backstage little segments. Little facial expressions. And then, of course, the thing in the chamber. Just little touches here or there. And Ric Flair really... you know, should get a lot of credit because him just being on Batista's side for like a year and a half really, I think, finally kind of got him going. And
yeah,
I think Flair deserves a lot of credit for Batista's success.
I agree. And unfortunately, Randy Orton's window was much smaller and the face turn just flopped and he only held the belt for a month. And then they had it here. And I don't know what the concussion thing was about. I don't know whose idea it was to book it like that. But
yeah, it was weird. I remember thinking it was legitimate at the time because
I did too. Yeah.
He sold it so well. And I'm like, it didn't seem likely if they do a storyline about that. So I just assumed it was real. So, the match is okay. Nothing crazy.
Yeah, no, it's nothing crazy. All right, at number 20 is we're in the top 20. Right now we're ranking the all of the world and WWE title matches in the history of the Royal Rumble. At number 20, we go to 2009 for Edge versus Jeff Hardy for the WWE Championship. Jeff Hardy won the match. Edge won the title in a big upset at the Survivor Series. But then Jeff Hardy stunned the crowd, mm-hmm. winning at Armageddon. And then he won the title. And then he defended the title here against Edge. And that, of course, the match turned at the end because Matt Hardy turned heel on Jeff, yep. cost him the title here, and Edge won the belt. Overall, the match was good, not great.
Yeah, not what you would expect for them.
Yeah, you would have expected a bit more out of it, but it's not terrible. But you would think that this match should be much higher just based on the names. But obviously, the match was there to give Edge the strap to prepare for that whole feud with Cena and Big Show. And obviously, this was setting up the big match between Matt versus Jeff at WrestleMania. So, again, this is one of those cases where, almost like modern day, where the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is kind of shoehorns feuds. Mm. This is where a title match shoehorned a feud. The only reason these two were put together was so that Jeff could lose it to start the feud with Matt and then just put the thing on Edge. So,
Of course, the build to this was all the stuff with Jeff getting burnt by the pyro.
Yeah.
And all the attacks and the car accident and all that stuff. So the build was kind of weird, too. And the match is fine, just not what you'd expect for these two. It was a little disappointing. And then the Matt thing at the end kind of was flat. But
yeah. So that's at number 20 on our list.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number 19 is the match you started to reference earlier. And
yes.
That's JBL versus Big Show versus Kurt Angle from 2005. Kind of a little bit of a, I don't want to say hidden gem, because it's not really a gem, but kind of a forgotten match. I think it's better than it's often remembered for. It's not that long, but the three of them had a pretty good rapport down, and they worked the formula that was tried and true with Big Show and Triple Threat matches, which is knock them out and then fight the other two guys. But you had the Cabinet getting involved. You had Team Angle getting involved. So there's a lot of chaos throughout the whole match. You had the bump through the barricade at ringside, and then JBL, as was his wont during this time, would escape with the title. But it was kind of cool seeing these three guys go at it. It was a unique mix of guys, and I thought it was better than the other title match on this show.
Yes, which we mentioned earlier on. JBL, and I had said as we were starting that, you know, it was getting to the point now where finally it seemed like people were getting on hooking to him and kind of getting on his bandwagon as champion. It took long enough. Obviously, he had the couple matches with Eddie and then those two forgettable matches with The Undertaker, but it seemed like finally here when he was starting to face pretty much every babyface in the roster, Eddie and Booker and all these guys, that finally it seemed like JBL's momentum was starting to carry him to a legitimate reign, and of course he ended up losing it. But
right.
I think this is where Armageddon was the first one I thought when everyone's like, oh, my guy's going to lose. Remember they did the whole like death walk to the ring, and
yep.
Same thing here. And I think the fans really, the older, you know, the usual fans that hook onto heels, really started to appreciate JBL,
you and I
included, and then of course he wouldn't hold it much longer. But still, I like the match for that aspect. Work rate wise, it is what it is with two big lumbering power guys, and of course Kurt, who can work with anybody, almost anybody, I guess. So not a bad match here, but not a great match. Kind of in the middle, and yes, better than the other match on that card. Okay, at number 18 is a match that many people think I overgraded, but I like it a lot. But the law of averages has it down for us at number 18, and that is Batista versus Mr. Kennedy for the World Heavyweight Championship in 2007 in San Antonio. I really like this match. I do. And the law of averages, though, has it a little lower. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something about it I like. It was perfectly length. I think it's like 10 and a half minutes. Kennedy really went all out here. Batista did a good job of kind of being the favorite, but this plucky heel with a big mouth actually kind of had a few shots at him, and I don't know. I just like the way the match is laid out. I thought it told a good story.
Yeah.
But
it kind of was like the harbinger of Batista's renaissance, because 2006, after he came back from his injury, he was terrible. And then this was kind of the match where he said, oh, maybe he's turning the corner a little bit. And then Mania obviously would be the jump start to the revival of his career. But I like this match. I mean, not as much as you did, but it was solid. I think it's one of Kennedy's probably best matches. It was a big spot for him.
Right.
He held his own. He showed he could hang. Of course, the finish was a little cheap, but
Yes.
It kind of worked there, and I'll also give a plug. You can check out our full review of this match on Bigelow34.proboards.com. We just posted this review last week, Royal Rumble 2007. Okay, let's move on to number 17. Now we go way back to 1991, the first Royal Rumble title match ever.
Yep.
And that is the Ultimate Warrior defending against Sergeant Slaughter. Of course, this was the huge upset thanks to Macho Man Randy Savage getting involved. Slaughter wins the title from Warrior. Crowd couldn't believe it. Major, major upset at the time. And the match itself, it often gets forgotten because of all the ancillary stuff. But the match is pretty solid, honestly. Slaughter was fine in the ring during this little run, at least up until Mania anyway. And Warrior was, did what he does best, sell and make a hot comeback. So I've always liked that match. I like everything that goes along with it. I thought Piper and Gorilla were great, selling the enormity of the title change.
Oh, absolutely. Remember, it took forever. It took like almost a minute and a half. And Gorilla kept saying, oh, they're not going to count it. No, they're not going to count it. They'll call a no contest or a DQ or something. Yeah, Warrior will get the title back. And then all of a sudden, Fink says, new world champion, mm-hmm. Sergeant Slaughter. And everybody just went like absolutely bonkers. It's a huge upset, and the place went crazy. And of course, this led to eventually what would happen at WrestleMania. And for Warrior, it was kind of the end of what started off as a great feud, but ended up being kind of a title reign, and then it kind of ran flat at the end. But the match itself is pretty good. I think the ending really sparks it, and Savage was just out of his skin. It was vintage Savage, to steal Michael Cole's term, because he was just out of his head. Hitting him with the light thing and just beating him up out of random things, coming in the ring, coming out, and hitting them with the scepter. And it was great chaos. It was very entertaining overall, and Slaughter got the big upset. So. Yep. For those that haven't watched that match in a while, pop it in. Mm. I think you'll like it. I don't know if it's on any DVDs, but I think you'll like it. At number 16 on our list is a match that a lot of people kind of forget about. It's kind of buried in that little run in the mid to late 90s. And that is Shawn Michaels winning the World Wrestling Federation Championship from Sid in the Alamo Dome in 1997. Because everyone remembers that's the match Shawn Michaels had the flu.
Right.
He was not feeling well. And the place just went bonkers. It was the second consecutive year that the Royal Rumble was not last.
Yep.
And certainly this did not disappoint. Obviously, they took advantage of the hometown crowd. It was a feel-good moment at the end. I remember Shawn hugged Vince and hugging people, I guess his family in the front row. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was a really good feel-good moment. And I think Sid did very well in that. It's one of Sid's better matches, I think. I think overall, even Shawn with the flu could still put on an unbelievable match.
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, I remember being a little bit disappointed because, with Shawn, you expect something great, and they came off a great Survivor Series match. This was just good. It wasn't anything, standing out. It was just a well-worked, basic match. Shawn did the basic face roll. Sid did the basic heel roll because they were in San Antonio. It was missing that little bit of edge that the product had in late 96, early 97, when you kind of had the big mix at the top of the card. And you didn't know who was what and what was who. So it was just missing that little special something. It's almost like they turned the clock back like 5 years and went back to the old formula for some reason when they were really working the whole edginess at that time. So I remember right. That was a little weird. All of a sudden it was like a culture shock back. You had the whole Rumble thing with Austin and Brett and all the cheating. And then all of a sudden you have this like antiseptic old school title match at the end. So,
right.
But it was well worked. I mean, you can't knock it. It was fine. And of course, like you said, the crowd was into it. So it's where it should be, right in the middle of the list.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Number 15, we go to 2011 once again last year, and Edge taking on Dolph Ziggler. Of course, Ziggler was actually champion coming into that show because he won, was it like the SmackDown before it, I think?
Yeah, yeah, he only held it for like 2 days.
It was like bullshit, right? Didn't they award him the title or something? He didn't even really win it. It was something screwy. And then Edge wins it back here. Good match, and that was kind of the start of Ziggler's great 2011, showing he could be put in that situation in a match with Edge. And, of course, Edge, as we now know, was kind of winding down his career at that point. So one of his probably last really good matches, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing that they ended up – it was – a good karma for him that they ended up changing things up at WrestleMania and he ended up beating Alberto Del Rio because the next night, obviously, he'd retire. This was a really good match. And like you said, after having a pretty good last 6 months of 2010, kind of getting himself into a good groove and really, settling into his own in the mid card, this was Dolph's real coming out party as a you know, an occasional main eventer, but a guy that you could see on camera consistently. And then those next few months after that, he kind of vanished a little bit and then got back in the groove in June, and since then he's been on fire. So this was definitely a match where Ziggler showed, because everyone thought he was toast after losing those, you know, three straight Intercontinental title matches to Rey Mysterio. What was it, 2000? Was it late 08 or late 09?
Right. Yep.
And then everyone thought he was toast. And you know, you got to give the kid credit. He kind of bounced back for himself, like we mentioned Batista did in 2007, and ended up having a renaissance. And Edge is Edge. You know, he's one of my favorites of all time, yours as well, and of course many fans. And you know, he always puts on a good match. But and he probably knew, obviously, I wonder if this is about this time that maybe the writing was on the wall for him and he really wanted to go out with a bang. So another forgotten match. If you don't have this pay-per-view, I don't think this is on any DVDs. Maybe it's on the best pay-per-view. It might be on the best, what was that?
Best
pay-per-views of 2011 DVD or something. But a good match. That's Edge and Dolph Ziggler from last year's show.
I was just actually going to check really quick. And that actually opened the show. Graham doesn't have it listed on any DVD. So.
Okay. So, yeah. So
that was 20 minutes, that match.
Was it really that long? Yeah. Wow.
And he has Edge as champion. So maybe he had gotten it back already. I don't know. I can never remember the whole deal with that.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. We'll double check that and clarify that for you. But I don't remember how that happened. I didn't think Dolph was champion going in. It was either vacant or Edge had gotten it back or something like that.
I know Dolph never really won it.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
Let's see what Wikipedia says. They have it as oh no, that's right. If Edge used the spear, he would have lost the title. I could have swore Dolph was champion going in there.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. I think he had it like for about an hour on SmackDown, something like that.
All right, here
that.
We go. The main rivalry from SmackDown involved Edge defending a set against Dolph Ziggler. After defeating Cody Rhodes, Drew McIntyre, Big Show, Ziggler won a title opportunity for the world title after Kane lost to Edge in his rematch. After winning his opportunity, Edge went on a campaign against Ziggler and his girlfriend, Vicky Guerrero. On January 28th, Vicky, who was the acting general manager, banned the use of the word spear and would strip him if he used it against Ziggler. So, yeah, we're way off. I don't know what I was thinking.
But anyway, Edge won. But Dolph really showed himself as a guy that could
be. Hopefully not too many people were screaming. I know I do that when I'm listening to podcasts and stuff, when someone gets something wrong and screaming at the thing. So hopefully we clarified it. But
yeah, but you know what? That's one thing. It's okay to blow something from a year ago that not many people remember. It's another thing to say, you know, that somebody else won a Rumble in 1991 or something. But all right. At number 14, as we head to the upper half of the list, one of my personal favorites. It is a little long, but it's a good one, and that's the Last Man Standing match from Philadelphia in 2004, Triple H and Shawn Michaels for the World Heavyweight Championship. This is a really good match for about the first, 18 minutes?
I was never crazy about this match, honestly, and I think it has to do with the fact that the match on Raw 4 weeks earlier or 3 weeks earlier was so great. That was the hype. That's what you expected going into this, especially with the stipulation added on. And for some reason, after SummerSlam 02, these guys just never really had a great pay-per-view match when it was just the two of them.
Right.
You know, they'd have some good TV stuff, but on pay-per-view, that doesn't really seem to click again. No pun intended, but they, I don't know. There was just something missing in this match. And then they did the terrible ending, of course, with the double knockout. And the whole reason was because they wanted to keep the belt, this epic reign going with Triple H, you know, for obviously what was to come at WrestleMania. So. Right. They, you know, they kind of do the crappy finish here. They obviously don't want Shawn to lose again. So, I mean, it's fine. It's just another one that was kind of hurt by the expectation headed in.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. After the, obviously, their match at SummerSlam 02 was one of my, like, two or three favorite matches of all time. Everyone after that, like you said, the three stages at Armageddon was good, not great. And then this one, and obviously later on in the year, they'd have that Taboo Tuesday match, but Shawn was eventually wrestling on one leg.
Yes. But
yeah, this match, I like it. I think I like it a little more than you did. Obviously, it's got two of my favorite guys in it. But yeah, I would say the last like 8 minutes of this match are really lag.
I don't hate it. It was just disappointing because I had such high hopes going in, and I just kind of got let down.
Yeah, no, I understand that. If the match was maybe 18 minutes instead of whatever the hell it was, 29 and a half or something, with the double knockout, I might have given it a little bit more.
Well, you know what also hurt it was the fact that it was in Philly, and I think that crowd was really expecting a wild brawl, and they gave him a brawl. But it was just, you know, to do that finish in front of Philly crowd and everything, it was just kind of tempting fate. So
yeah, we know the history of shitty match endings in Philadelphia. So
all right, let's go to number 13. A match, another match. I don't really totally remember. I think you can see the trend of these shows that I'll watch at like Picasso's at the bar. That I don't fully remember them all the time. I do remember enjoying it though. Undertaker Rey Mysterio 2010. I remember liking how a unique match it was, and I was kind of digging Taker's title reign there. It was rare, honestly, for as many title reigns as he's had. I think he's never really had one that crossed a bunch of pay-per-views and saw him face different challengers. So it was kind of cool to see him defend against Rey here. A really unique match. And I think it was one. Didn't Rey earn it with a win over someone else? And it was no one thought he was actually going to win and have this match, and he did.
Yeah, it was like a four-way or something, yeah. I think, with like MVP or a bunch of other guys or something. And he kind of got the big upset. And Taker came in the ring, and you saw the whole disparagement of size and height. But, you know, kudos to Rey here. I remember the pace being very good. I remember Taker kind of upping his speed a little bit and kind of letting, obviously, you know, he would end up having an unbelievable match 2 months later with a guy just as fast.
Okay, there was actually a lot going on here. Rey won a beat the clock challenge. And then, let's see here. Well, yeah, he was the reigning winner, but Batista and R-Truth went to a time limit draw due to Mysterio's interference. Mysterio was then ruled the number one contender, but Vicky Guerrero overruled the standing, announcing the contenders would face again Mysterio and Batista to determine who would face Undertaker at the Rumble. So I think that's what it was. And actually, that was a no contest. The next week, they fought inside a cage. And I think a lot of people expected Batista to win and just face Taker, and you didn't really think Mysterio would win that. So Mysterio did win and fought Taker at the Rumble.
Yes, and another match that I think a lot of people need to watch again and get a good think of, including you and I probably. But it was good in the sense that Taker really kind of got himself ready for his rematch with Shawn a couple months later. Get back into that speed match, and Rey kind of ran him in circles a little bit, but obviously in the end the power was just too much for the little guy to handle. So a big win for Taker, and number 13 on our list of the greatest Royal Rumble title matches of all time.
In 11 minutes, that match.
Yes. At number 12 is a great match, but an ending everybody hated.
Yeah.
And that was down in Miami in 2006, John Cena and Edge for the WWE Championship. 3 weeks earlier, everyone was on cloud nine when Edge cashed in Money in the Bank and beat Cena after the Chamber match at New Year's Revolution. And then 3 weeks later, he has Edge tap out to the STFU in Miami, and just everybody was just so pissed. And I think that's where – I mean, he did have some boos when he was facing Angle at the end of 05, but this is really, I think, where the venom started, because everybody's guy, Edge, you know, won the big match, and everybody was so jacked and excited that one of their favorite guys – and then Cena comes in and just kind of, you know, Indian gives the whole thing, and everybody just feels so empty inside afterwards. But the match itself – is very good, and it's a harbinger of things to come between these two for the rest of 2006. So the match itself, if you take away the ending and the fact that everybody hated the fact Cena won the belt back, and just look at it as a standalone match.
Yeah, they never really had a bad match. And it was just bad timing, because Edge won the title. They obviously needed to get Money in the Bank off of him, but they already had penciled in Cena and Triple H as kind of their big dream money match at WrestleMania, and I'm fine with that. It's just that Edge was so over when he won, it kind of threw everyone for a loop, and then they just took the title right back off him, and everyone's like, oh, what the fuck, we were just getting into this. You know, they made things right after WrestleMania, and Edge got back in the title picture, but and it worked out, because Edge and Foley had their great match, but it was a little disappointing at the time. You know, you hoped Edge, maybe they'd switch things. It was actually the polar opposite of the year before. They changed things around because Batista got hot and they switched the match around. But Triple H Orton did not have the money drawing potential of Triple H Cena did. And, you know, they were kind of proven right, because that match was very good at WrestleMania 22 and the crowd was red hot for it. So I'm guessing they did the right thing. It would have been a completely different dynamic if they had Cena at Edge at Mania again. So it just sucked to see Edge, you know, be splattered so quickly after winning the title and having a great 3 weeks. If you remember, the ratings went up on Raw and everyone was all jazzed up. So, the match itself is very good.
Yeah. And I mean, Edge didn't have a bad next few months. Again, he faced Foley at WrestleMania and all the awesome stuff at New Year's
Flair too. That was actually before the Rumble. He had the TLC with Flair.
Yeah, that was the TLC on Raw. But him and Foley, and then they have the great matches you know, end up having the great match at One Night Stand, and then kind of interfering with Cena and kind of, again, shooting.
Was in Backlash that year? Was he involved in that? He was
in the three-way. Yeah, he was in the three-way because then Triple H did the whole curtain jerk and comment that everybody got pissed off at. But so he was still in the main event at least for another. And then, you know, Edge ended up having a great 2006 overall. Mm-hmm. And this is a tremendous match. Just the ending pissed everyone off. So, but take away from that, the match is actually very good. Probably the highlight match-wise of this entire pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, number 11 is one of my favorites, a hidden classic in my eyes, and that's Bret Hart and Razor Ramon from 1993. Just a great, basic, old-school match. A lot of psychology, a lot of great selling from Bret. He wins clean, defends his title against the up-and-coming guy, and that had been built really really well. When I've been watching a lot of those superstars in late 92, and Ramon was given a monster push right off the bat coming in, and he was strong heading into that match. Of course, he had jumped Owen Hart, and then Stu was at ringside and Helen, and it was just a very, you know, a classic Bret Hart, psychology-driven, old-school selling match.
I agree. Razor's vignettes got everybody all excited. And, of course, he immediately jumped in with Flair and the whole thing with Savage and Perfect. I mean, he was immediately inserted into the top of the card and then given this match. And Bret really, I think this was a great, one of the first great examples of Bret taking a guy who obviously isn't totally on par with him talent-wise. But, you know, Scott Hall, when he was sober, is actually one of the better workers in the history of the company. And I think these two, and I – do you think their match is not as good as the one at King of the Ring? You think this one's better than the one at King of the Ring?
I always like this one better. It's a little bit longer and there's more on the line. The King of the Ring match is good too, but I liked the psychology here better. The King of the Ring one is like an abridged version of this match.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Bret looked great. Razor looked great.
It was a win Bret needed. You know, he had a great win over Shawn at Survivor Series, and this continued to help legitimize him, especially going into a match with Yokozuna. It showed that he could hang with a big guy.
Yeah, knowing that the Rumble was going to end with a bad guy winning, you wanted kind of a good feel-good moment. This was one. You know, this is the quintessential Bret Hart match, beat up by a bigger dude, but then comes in with some good slick moves at the end and comes away with a victory. So, great match for the Hitman and a win over Razor in 1993. Good call. That was, of course, in Sacramento. All right, we are in our top 10.
Mm-hmm.
At number 10, one of the most dramatic matches on our list, and one that was a source of controversy for a few years to come.
Yeah, I had a hard time ranking this one, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, and that was the I Quit match between The Rock and Mankind from Anaheim in 1999. That, of course, is the infamous 12 chair shots that gave Foley like a 9-inch gash in his forehead, or in the top of his head, and Rock never apologized for it, and the whole shit going on for the next couple of months. This is a difficult match to rank. I don't know if it's their best one.
No, I don't think so.
It's funny
because they had a lot of dramatic matches, but they never really had a great match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the Raw one obviously had the most heat and it was the most exciting.
Right.
This match was the most brutal. I mean, technically, I guess it's their best match, but it's just hard to watch. Like, I wanted to rank it because it's pretty good, so I wanted to have it kind of high. But when you factor in the chair shots and the Foley family at ringside, if you watch Beyond the Mat. That totally kind of takes you out of this match. It's hard to really sit through once you've seen all that. So
yeah,
it's a match I probably would have ranked higher if I didn't know the whole backstory.
Yeah, and of course, if you look at Beyond the Mat, you see the gash on Foley's head is
sick.
It's at least 2 inches deep. I mean, it's not a joke. And apparently, according to Foley, Rock never apologized. It's in the book, and I believe it's on the Hits and Misses DVD. I think he references it briefly. But again, it's a good match, this is one of those matches where I think the ancillary stuff kind of gives it a little nudge,
right?
Over some other matches.
Yeah, and even the ending. I mean, you know, they do the whole screw where they screw Foley over. He says, "I quit," and that stuff. And of course,
yeah, the tape from Heat. Yeah,
of course, Halftime Heat would be a few weeks later, and Foley would win the title back. But
yep.
A good match, a fun match. If you kind of take it out of the context of the brutality. In a violent match, it really kind of symbolizes the Attitude Era of that style. So,
yes.
All right, number 9, another Attitude Era style match, and that is Kurt Angle and Triple H from 2001. These are two guys that always kind of struggled to have the match you thought they would have. This is probably the closest they came, I think. You had a lot of outside stuff with Stephanie and Trish fighting on the outside, and then of course Austin would end up costing Triple H the match. So, which they
Vince
had been
came out.
Yeah, Vince came out. Yep, they had a lot going on.
Yeah.
A pretty wild match, but I would say it's probably their best major match together.
Yeah, I think more people I remember more. A lot of people expected more out of the one a year later at No Way Out, and that ended up not being very good at all.
And that one I wasn't expecting much from. The one I think everyone was really hyped for was Unforgiven the year before, coming off the Love Triangle. And
yes.
Then, of course, they did the whole thing where Triple H just ended up staying as a heel, and Steph turned on Kurt, and everyone was just kind of like, ugh. Like, to me, that's almost kind of like the turning point for the that era. I mean, 2001 is great in-ring action and still a lot of good storyline stuff, but that's kind of the... what a lot of people point to is the death knell of, like, the mainstream hype was that Love Triangle falling flat at Unforgiven.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people wanted Triple H to turn face there. Mm-hmm. But this match is very good. It's also long, and obviously a lot of interference around it, but it would be the best match these two would have. And obviously a historical moment is that this is the pay-per-view match in which Hunter debuts his music that he has now, the mm-hmm. Motorhead theme. That was the first pay-per-view match. I don't think it was his first match, period.
No, I think he had used it on Raw, yeah.
I think he had used it on Raw, but this is the first pay-per-view match that he actually uses the theme that he's had now for 11 years. Yeah, a really good match. I mean, again, the best one these two would have. When we get to the summertime, and we did this last year and it never happened, but when we get our kind of quiet weeks and we ever do a pay-per-view or a podcast on the Attitude Era, which might have to be a multi-night one, mm-hmm. We're going to have to talk about kind of the – because there were good combinations and there were bad combinations in terms of all the main players in the Attitude Era. Like Triple H and Kurt never had the greatest match. Rock and Undertaker never had the greatest match.
Right.
Their No Way Out match in 02 was good. But this was about as good as these two were going to get. You're right. We won't go on more Attitude Era talk. But, all the interference on the outside with Vince and Trish, and it was kind of a messy on the outside. But if you just pay attention to the match itself, it is very good. It is very good. And it's the best match those two would have. So I agree with you on that one. At number 8, we go to Madison Square Garden in 2008 as Edge takes on Rey Mysterio, defending his World Heavyweight Championship.
And let's just lump these next two together again like we did earlier. Also from that year is Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy from 2008. So we have those back-to-back. Because I really couldn't decipher them because I remember enjoying them both equally. And this is, of course, where Jeff's first initial rise was happening, late 07 into 08. And, of course, then you get popped for the drug violation, just when it looked like he was really going to be set for a major run in 08.
Yeah.
But I remember really liking that match. Wasn't that coming off the whole thing where Jeff hit the Swanton off the big ladder onto
yes.
Orton or whatever?
Yep.
Or
off the Titantron. Yeah, off the whatever it is, I can't believe the word just went out of my head. You know, not the Titantron, but he crawled up the
yeah,
side
right.
of the,
yeah, that's fine.
The set thing. Yeah, the set thing. And the match ended up being very good, you know, and that show was very memorable too, obviously with Cena winning and him surprise coming in, because remember that's when he had tore his pec and no one knew when he was coming back. The crowd was hot. This is one of those matches where the crowd kind of gave it that extra sizzle. Which of these two? I know we ranked it 8-7, but I think I might like the Edge Rey match a little more. I mean, it's almost like 8 and it's like 7-7B.
They're about equal. I just remember the Orton Jeff match had more heat behind it, and everyone was so into seeing Jeff Hardy possibly win. I remember a lot of people being kind of upset that Jeff didn't win because they thought he should finally break through. Of course, they were proven right. WWE was when Jeff failed the wellness test, but I don't know. Orton was on a real roll. Remember in 07, late 07, that's when he was really starting to finally kind of click and get it.
Yes.
Coming off the great last man standing and No Mercy and all that stuff. So, and then Edge Ray, they had the Vicky stuff mixed in. And wasn't that when Ray gave her the seated centaur or knocked her down? She was in the wheelchair and all that stuff.
Yes.
You're probably splitting hairs debating the two, but
yeah, nah. So there you go. The back to backs, the Madison Square Garden at number 8, number 7 from 2008, Edge and Rey Mysterio for the world title and Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy for the WWE title. At number 6, a lot of people thought this was going to be the last time these two would ever face each other. Mm-hmm. But, of course, that would not be the case. At least it would take 11 years. But at number 6, we go to San Jose to the Shark Tank for the casket match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker for the WWF Championship. After the two unbelievably great matches in 1997, this match with the – this one's a little different because you had a little more storyline hook to it. You have the casket, and of course Kane now on their side after the whole Raw where they're holding the hands to each other and the lightning's coming down and all the crazy shit. But Shawn, he hadn't, well, at least for the first, 6 minutes was fine.
Right, yeah. And even after he gets hurt, he seems to be okay for the rest of the match. Because I think he always says it was the next day when he woke up and he couldn't walk.
I think the adrenaline kind of
got him through this match. But yeah, obviously it's not as great as their Hell in a Cell or even the Ground Zero match, but it's still very, very good. I think it's often overlooked, honestly, because it was kind of the third tacked on match, and it's not remembered as well as the other two.
Right, and obviously, for those that don't remember, I'm sure you do, that's the one where Undertaker backdrops Shawn over the rope and over the casket, but he hits his lower back on the hinge, and obviously... And it's weird because Shawn says on his DVD that he ruptured like three discs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were like on the verge of going anyway.
Yeah,
and that just put him over.
Yeah. So, but a great match, and I know it's on the DX, that original. Remember that original DX DVD? It's on that one, and I'm sure it's on something else. I don't think it's on Takers. No, it's not on Takers. I think the two.
It's on. Hell, yeah, I think it is on something. Hang on, I can tell you right now.
Yeah, I know the two matches from 97 are on Taker's DVD, the Tombstone.
It's on Shawn Michaels' His Journey.
Oh, it's on My Journey. Okay.
That's weird. Graham has it as His Journey. Yes, My Journey. It's
on yes, so at number six, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker in the casket match from 19.
All right, top five now. We're kind of all splitting hairs. These next two to me are kind of on the outside looking in. I think the top three is where you really get into the cream of the crop. But number five is Chris Jericho and Rock from 2002. Of course, they had that great, great run of matches starting in October. No Mercy, then on opposite sides of Survivor Series, then again in Armageddon. They had a great match on Raw. And then this one here, where Jericho defeats The Rock to retain and head into WrestleMania. These guys just had great chemistry. They worked really well together. You could tell they legitimately liked each other, and Rock really wanted to help Jericho get over. And I remember a lot of rumblings at that time that he was pissed the way Triple H kind of treated him. I mean, even Austin, I think, because he was the only one really busting his ass to help Jericho look like a legitimate main event player.
Right.
But yeah, not the best of their series, but still really, really damn good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Of course, this was the one down in Atlanta. And yeah, well, you remember Triple H was just coming back, and Austin, as we know on his DVD, and he was not in the right mind at that point. He was getting a little frustrated with the company, so he really wasn't treating anybody well, to be honest with you. But kudos to Rock here. Rock always knows how to put guys over. I think he has an edge over others from the Attitude Era in that aspect. He just does what's good for the company, and doing this was good for the company. So I like this match quite a bit, and it was really the capper for Jericho, who would end up beating Rock and Stone Cold twice each in the span of 3 months.
Yep.
So can't do that. You know, not many people could say that. So
he beat Rock more than that, didn't he? Because he beat him at – didn't he beat him on Raw or No Mercy? He beat him on one of those two matches.
He beat him at No Mercy.
And then Rock got his
win
back on
Raw. And
then Rock
won it back on Raw, yep. And then they were on opposite sides at Survivor Series.
Jericho beat him again at Armageddon.
No, I'm sorry. They were on the same side at Survivor Series. And
well,
Jericho
but
just
then,
hit
yeah,
him.
Jericho beat him again at Armageddon, though, and then beat Jericho him here. Beat him again, so and he beat him three here, out of four.
Yeah, so very impressive. At number four on the list, again, pretty close to this one, but just not quite at the in the big trilogy. But still a match that's very, very good. And you and I talked about it extensively on a recent Vault. And that is from down at the Sun Dome in Tampa, Bret the Hitman Hart defending the World Wrestling Federation title against Big Daddy. Oh, no, sorry, the opposite. Diesel defending the World Wrestling Federation title against Bret the Hitman Hart. My bad. In 1995 in Tampa. Great match. One of the more unheralded. I mean, everyone talks about the Survivor Series match as their best, and it probably is. But this one's pretty good. Again, this one's kind of marred, similar to Kurt and Triple H with all the interference and millions of guys running in, Owen and Jarrett and all these other guys all going crazy. But the meat and potatoes of the match is very, very good. And Bret just knew how to – I think Bret, almost more than Shawn a little bit, knew how to really make Diesel into something special.
Right.
You know, and this is not a knock on Shawn whatsoever.
Well, it's weird because Bret almost did a better heel match with Diesel than Shawn did at Mania, because Shawn was almost more like the face at that show.
Right.
Bret, to me, was more believable beating on a big guy just because he kind of had that more of a precision offense, where Shawn was more high-flying moves and high-impact moves. And Bret was all about kind of working the leg, and it was believable to see him break Diesel down and work his leg over. So the only thing stopping this match from being a little bit higher is probably the ending. Of course, with all the interference. And we talked about how it kind of made sense at the time. It doesn't hurt it totally. But definitely a very, very overlooked match. A long match. They go,
like 27.
Yeah, 27, 26.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, a great long match. It's on the Greatest Wrestling Stars of the 90s DVD if you have that. So check that out if you haven't seen it in a while. We don't have to get too far into that because we just, like you said, we just talked about it.
Just about the vault, exactly. All right, we are in the top three, and my PIC will give you the number three match, and it's one we just recently watched, and superb.
Yes.
Superb encounter.
That is 2007, once again. John Cena versus Umaga, last man standing. It was set up by New Year's Revolution, where Umaga dominated him for the whole match, and that match was way better than I ever remembered it being.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Umaga dominated him the whole match. Cena got a lucky the crux of the story was that he couldn't beat him using his two big moves, STF and the STFU, so he ended up beating him with a roll-up, and that was like Umaga's one mistake in the match. So the coach, I believe, was the GM at the time. He let Armando, decide what the stipulation should be for the Rumble. They picked Last Man Standing, and the whole story there was, again, that Cena could not do his moves to put Umaga away. A brutal, brutal match with some great spots. You had the Umaga running across the announce tables and splashing Cena through the Spanish one. That sick TV monitor shot that he cracks Umaga with. And then, of course, the finish where he just chokes Umaga out, Cena's bloody face. And this was like the coming out party officially for Cena, where you're like, all through 05 and 06, a lot of people thought he was just being carried in great matches. 07 is where everyone realized maybe he could be the guy carrying people.
Well, the one thing I always loved about this match, and I loved about this feud is, and I mentioned this in our comments, in our written review of the match, and I said the same thing in New Year's Revolution. You figured, beginning with when he won the title from JBL, and all through the next year and a half, he faced A, guys similar his size, and B, guys that the fans, even though they were heels, loved. Triple H, Edge, Kurt, Jericho. This was the first time, this was almost a Hogan-esque kind of match.
Right.
From the old school years, where Cena's the smaller, babyface good guy facing a legit big man heel that fans just hated. There was no, yay, we like Umaga. No, nobody had that. Even the dudes hated Umaga. And so this was finally Cena's legitimate chance to really be put over as a real superhero, and who had his kryptonite, as we stated. And Cena just brought the goods. And I love the storytelling, and it just the San Antonio crowd was red hot. It was just a great match, and I was pleasantly surprised. I remember you telling me that you're going to really love this match, and I didn't remember it as much, liking it as much as I did when I watched it the first time live. But watching it again to do our review, guys were awesome.
Yeah,
and Umaga deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, Umaga was awesome. He really was a great character and great in the ring as well. So check out, once again, the message board. A lot of these shows we've reviewed, that just happens to be the freshest. So check that out for more. Now we hit the top two. Mm-hmm. And these two, to me, again, were splitting hairs. I mean, really, they're probably 1A, 1B. But I'll let Scott reveal number two. And, of course, that'll give number one away as well, yes. I guess.
Number two. We talked about the antithesis match earlier on. 2003 in Boston, we talked about Scott Steiner, Triple H. Well, this one was the complete 180. And number two on our list of the greatest Royal Rumble title matches of all time, Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle for the WWE Championship in Boston in 2003. I think everyone knew when this match was booked, we were in for a pretty damn good treat. Mm-hmm. I mean, when these guys feuded in 2001, they had those three consecutive pay-per-views, and every single one of them was great. But this one, obviously, obviously the title helped here because obviously Benoit had never won it, so the drama was there for that. And then, of course, you had Shelton and Haas. Really, these two just knew what to do in this match. And obviously, coming off that colossal piece of shit that everybody just had to watch, they knew that. They almost could have half sped it, and it still would have been great.
Well, they were in a tough spot though, because they really had to win the crowd back, because the crowd was just dead after that Triple H disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
So they really had to win them back, and they do. By the end of the 20 minutes, that crowd is just locked into that match, and they even get Benoit the standing ovation after the match. And really, this was kind of Benoit's return. You know, he came back in 02 from the neck injury in the middle of 02, and you know he had some great tag work and everything, but it wasn't until the very end of 02 where he really started to kind of get his groove back in his singles matches.
Yep.
And this was really like the one that was ever remembered how great he was all of a sudden. Like, wow, that's right, this guy can do this. And this was at a time when a lot of fans were hoping they were going to change the main event style. If you remember 03, you had Benoit, Kurt, Brock, guys that looked to be the ones that maybe were changing the style from, you know, the wild brawls of the Attitude Era to more of a mat-based, realistic style.
Yes.
Didn't really come totally to fruition, but this is a great match. It put Benoit back on the map. I know people were disappointed there, and then there were rumors that when Kurt obviously had his neck injury heading into WrestleMania, a lot of people thought maybe, or the rumors out there were that Benoit was going to take his spot and fight Brock for the title, but obviously did not happen, and Benoit would get his moment a year later. So, yes. But yeah, just an awesome, just definitely a 5-star match. And like I said, this and our next one are splitting hairs. So I think you and I just happen to prefer the style of the next one better, but you can't really go wrong with this match.
No. So the number one greatest title match in the history of the Royal Rumble, we go to Madison Square Garden. Street fight. The official coming out party for the game. And another legendary moment for a legendary guy. I'm, of course, talking about Triple H defending the World Wrestling Federation Championship against Cactus Jack. It's the perfect match. The perfect title match. The brawl was great. Time to play the game! It always takes you so long to play that. That's awesome.
It's always. Just, this is, twice I've done it.
All right, well. All right, 2 for 2. I know it's in the middle of the thing, so. If you don't have the DVD, I feel bad for you because there's an I do feel bad, and please find it. You can find it on Amazon.
If you can't afford the DVD, I feel real bad for you.
I feel real bad. Well, actually, I paid a lot for that because I usually, you know, I think I spent, because I bought it like about 5 years later, and I think I spent like $35 because it was very rare. But there's an extra, not the match itself. And the match itself you can find on plenty of compilations.
Yeah.
The reason I'm saying it's a shame for those that don't have this DVD is because there's an extra clip in the back of the doctors pulling a piece of wood out of Triple H's calf from when he got backdropped on the pallet. And to me, that is the perfect example there, mm-hmm, of the absolute brutality of that match. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing too, because if you look at late 99, Foley was atrocious.
Oh, those blue sweatpants and his big sweaty fat ass. Oh,
around September through December was just terrible. And of course, as the story goes, he was actually going to retire in November, or Vince wanted him to retire in November because he was starting to get worried about his mental capacities and everything else. He was having concussion issues and he was memory issues, and Vince wanted his last match to be a Survivor Series, the one he had, and Mick didn't want to go out like that. So he busted his ass to get into shape. They brought back Cactus Jack, and the goal, of course, was to make Triple H a legitimate main event star. And, you know, Foley did it. He got him over. He made him look like a beast. But Triple H, I think, doesn't get enough credit for that. I see a lot of people out there kind of slag on him, saying, oh, he never gives Foley the credit he deserves for making him a star. And that's true. He probably doesn't. But Triple H busted his ass in that match. I mean, it's not like it was a smoke and mirrors Foley job where he carried himself. I mean,
right.
Triple H took just as many sick bumps, as many blade jobs and tack hits and everything else that you want to say in that match. And, of course, the next match as well at No Way Out.
Right.
Yeah, just a phenomenal sick brawl. And honestly, I won't even say this is the greatest Rumble title match ever. I mean, it is up there, like top five, probably WWF pay-per-view matches of all time. Top five.
I don't think there's any question about that.
Just
I think
it's a tremendous match. Yeah, one you can never get tired of watching.
No, absolutely not. It's definitely one of Triple H's like three best matches of all time, and definitely one of Cactus's. And I was live. I was fortunate enough to be live for their rematch in the Cell the following month, which was, again, just as good. But this match is the standard bearer for Mick and for Triple H. Just an unbelievable match. Like I said, the match itself is on many compilations. I'm sure many people have it. If you have the pay-per-view DVD, then you're fortunate again, because you get to see that great little extra where they're yanking a 6-inch piece of wood out of Triple H's calf, blood all over the place in the back. It was crazy. So there you have it. You're 1-29. All of the world and WWE title matches in the history of the Royal Rumble. And number one on the list is the game and The Man from Truth or Consequences in 2000 at the Garden.
All right. The next list we're going to do is ranking the all-time Rumble winners. And I think this one we might have to move a little bit quickly to through because yeah. I think our last list is going to take up a lot of time. Yes. So I'll kick it off. We got 24 of these. We ranked them based on importance of the win, like what they went on to do with it, eliminations, time in the ring, and just overall impressive how impressive the performance was. So, you know, if you might have a guy that looks impressive on the surface, and then you kind of study the Rumble itself, and you're like, not as impressive. So, Okay, let's kick off with the obvious number 24, this Big John Studd in 1989. The win went absolutely nowhere. I still don't understand why he won it. He came in at the very end, tossed a few guys, and won. And the match really torpedoed after the Mega Powers were eliminated, and that whole thing went down. So I think we can just quickly move ahead.
Yes. Oh, thanks. I'm glad you went to go first.
I'm not even going to play this song for you tonight. I'll let you off the hook.
Okay, at number 23, and really it's because nobody cared about the match because the whole point of this show was the contract signing. And
you almost wonder if you should even really I mean, you count it because we count it. But
right, and that is, of course, Hacksaw Jim Duggan winning in 1988 at Cops Coliseum in
I got my 2x4.
Lying bastard. yes, number 20.
I got the American flag.
You don't play that part enough that we. It doesn't fit the rest of the song. But anyway, he won the thing. And
I almost forgot how to do that. I haven't done it in so long.
He didn't even eliminate the last guy. He just fell, and fat-ass one-man gang fell over the top rope. He didn't even really eliminate him.
This is true.
But anyway, I was running for Morocco in that Rumble. But but anyway,
Big John Duggan. All right, let's move on. 2022. Last year's winner, Alberto Del Rio. Really not. That whole Rumble was nothing. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch, but looking back, I was kind of skimming the results, and not a lot of impressive entrance in that Rumble, and Del Rio came in late. Of course, they had the whole thing with him and Santino, which was funny, but doesn't really mark the win as anything special. And of course, he didn't even end up winning the world title at WrestleMania coming off the Rumble, so nothing too special out of Del Rio.
And which is funny, because remember, they did the whole 40 guys, and everybody thought the 40-guy idea was cool, and in the end, you're like...
I enjoyed the 40 guys. It was different, but...
Right.
Yeah, it just kind of threw off the history of the... It was like a... It's like when they do like a shortened season, kind of throws off all the stats. It's like, looking at that one, it kind of threw off all the stats.
Yeah, exactly. So, next on the list, at number, 21, and that is Vince McMahon winning in 1999. Of course, it was nothing more than a storyline plot, so...
Right.
Because people wanted to get kind of worried. And I remember being really angry for some reason that Stone Cold didn't win that one. Obviously...
I know fans look back, too, and kind of crap on it, saying, oh, Vince won the match. But I thought it was fine, like, in retrospect, when you look at the storyline. Like, I understand why they did it. It's just the way they did it, him being number two, and then he commentates that. The whole Rumble itself just sucked. But him winning, I really don't have an issue with, to be honest.
I mean, I was mad at the time in my more, it was kind of more like as a mark thinking because I didn't want Stone Cold to lose, but that's what made it work. And then, of course, you know, obviously Vince vacated it and it led to the cage match at the Massacre. But in terms of the performance, really, Vince eliminated nobody and he spent the whole time hiding in the one guy. Yeah. Well, yeah. And he spent the whole time, hiding in the bathroom. So it really wasn't that impressive.
All right. Number 20 is 2010 Edge's big surprise return win. Of course, he had been out injured, wasn't supposed to be in the match, comes out at the very end and ends up winning it. Fun for a great surprise, fun for a great pop, but the win itself, you can't really give too much credence to. Obviously, he didn't really do much, didn't really eliminate much. And did he win?
No, Jericho beat him.
That's right, yes.
Jericho beat him, and then that week, Swagger cashed in Money in the Bank.
That's right, okay. So, yeah, he didn't cash in either. So, nothing special for Edge besides remembering the great moment there.
Yes. At number 19 is the year before, Randy Orton winning in 2009. Of course, it led to that really weird feud with Triple H where he beats up the family, but Triple H had the belt. So it was really very strange. It was one of the few times that a heel – it had been the first time really since – God, when was the last time a heel won the Rumble before that?
It's been a while.
Sean in 95, really, I guess. I don't know. But, I mean, it was a while.
Well,
but,
Vince.
Oh, Vince, yeah. But, I mean, like a legitimate one. But, yeah. And you know, the whole feud with Triple H breaking into the house and leading to that really hideous match at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird – nothing came from it. I mean
– And even or, his appearance in the Rumble itself was nothing special. I mean, he came in early. He was in at, like, number 8, but he only eliminated a couple guys. I mean, he didn't really do much.
Well, pretty much Legacy did all the work. Yeah, I think DiBiase and Cody Rhodes pretty much carried him through the last, like, 40 minutes of the match. So nothing really impressive there for Orton.
All right, number 18, we go to the year before that, and that is John Cena's surprise return in Madison Square Garden. Of course, he had been injured in October, and the word was that he was going to be out at least until WrestleMania, if not further, and shocked the world. That was one of the best-kept secrets they've done in a long time at that point. No one expected him to come out, and the pop when he came out was just massive. I remember I was watching that Picasso's, and the place just erupted when he came out and ended up winning the match. So another one that's like Edge, a great memory. But not really a great performance. And then he as well would not even end up winning the title that year. So
no, he actually cashed in his shot at No Way Out.
Yeah, so that ruined it as well.
Yeah, and he lost it to Orton. And, of course, Orton would keep it at WrestleMania anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I think Hunter would win it at Backlash. Was a crazy Cena guy there that night? Do you remember? The annoying Patriots fan.
I'm sure
that's
he
also
was,
the annoying
yeah.
Cena
sure
fan.
Was,
yeah. All right, at number 18, we go to Madison Square Garden again.
17, right?
Let's see, 24, 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. 17.
It's my fault.
We have, we go back to The Rock. Or go back to Madison Square Garden. The Rock winning in 2000. Coming off that awesome match we just bloviated about with Triple H and Cactus, we have this Rumble, which.
It was fun.
It was fun, but I mean the 30 guys were really not that great. There was a lot of fluff
right.
in there.
No, and you knew it was Rock's to win. And then, you know, they spiced it up a little bit by doing the fuck finish with Big Show and everything. So, you know, they right. messed it up a little bit on you just to try and give you a little intrigue. But going right. in, it was clear that it was Rock's to win.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So
number 16.
Next up. Yep.
2003 in Boston, Brock Lesnar's win. Another guy that came in late, didn't do a lot of damage, but did take advantage of the win, went on to WrestleMania to win the world title. Looked impressive. He won the qualifying match earlier in the night. Had the deck stacked against him, and of course he eliminates Undertaker. That kind of hurt it in my ass too, because wasn't Taker, who was he fighting with on the apron, and then Brock comes up from behind.
Not Maven.
Maven.
Was it A-Train? A-Train or Big Show?
I forget. Someone was fucking with him on the outside. Oh, Batista.
Yeah.
Batista was.
Oh, it was Batista, okay.
Yeah, he was messing with him from the outside, and Brock came up from behind and dumped him. But that was the Haas Final Four. It was Batista, Taker, Kane, and Brock, so
yeah,
a lot of meat in the end there, and of course Brock would win and move on. So
yes, number 15 on the list, we go to New Orleans for Steve Austin's third King of the Ring victory in 2001.
Royal Rumble, you mean.
I'm sorry, Royal Rumble win in 2001. Of course, he eliminated the Red Hot Kane, who may have had one of the greatest performances of all time. We'll get to that a little bit later. Eliminates him at the end. It was good. It wasn't obviously his best performance. He would, though, parlay it into winning the world title at WrestleMania. Of course, the infamous heel turn that my PIC absolutely hates. And then the next month, he would have that another awesome match.
I don't hate
match.
The heel turn. I hate the way they did it.
Oh, okay. And, of course, the following month at No Way Out, he would have probably my second favorite match of all time, which is the Three Stages of Hell with Triple H. It gets a good spot on the list because, you know, he parlayed it into a pretty red hot next couple of months.
Yep.
But you kind of get a knock because he eliminated Kane, and you almost feel like Kane deserved a better fate.
Yeah, I know. He busted his ass. Yeah, he did a lot in that Rumble. And Austin didn't really do too much in that Rumble. Another guy comes in late and kind of eliminates a few guys. But, I mean, he was so over at that point. The pop was big, and he did. You know, it was a great finish to the Rumble, so he's a little bit higher than some of the other ones. So.
Yeah.
Okay, checking in next, we go to 2002 for Triple H's big return. Another guy that you just knew. There was a lot of star power in this Rumble, 2002,
yes.
But it was fairly obvious that Triple H was going to win. He comes in a little bit later, but the Final Four was great that year. It was Triple H, Austin, Mr. Perfect, and Kurt Angle.
Yes.
Great finish, Final Four. And Hunter does get a big pop for the win. So I always enjoyed that Rumble. And he, of course, would use the win to win the world title at WrestleMania.
Yes. All right. I have no much more to say. Again, one of my favorites. I would say my absolute favorite. even though he is my guy, but there's a lot of others I like too. At number 13 is one we just watched, and really the last 10 minutes of this match are awesome. And we go to San Antonio for the Undertaker's win in 2007. Of course, the highlight of that one is him and Shawn Michaels going heads up for about like the last 11 minutes of the match.
Yeah, yep.
A lot of people were crazy about him.
First guy to come in at number 30 to win.
Yes. A lot of people, I remember, were kind of half and half on that, though, because they thought, oh, Taker won the Rumble. It means, you know, that match is an automatic win then. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of unfortunate when right. Taker's in title matches, it's a buzzkill because you know he's not going to lose. So,
well, at that point, though, it wasn't. I mean, the streak was going, but it wasn't until a couple years later where it really hit the mythical stretch. I think 07, heading into Batista. I remember a lot of rumors out there that Batista was going to be the one to end the streak, and people were pissed off because Batista hadn't really done much at that point, and they were talking about using that to really propel him as a major star. So I don't think it was a given that Taker was going to win at that show.
Well, and there were other rumors I read, too, that there were, I remember some rumblings where that the original WrestleMania match was going to be the rematch between Cena and Triple H, but right. obviously Triple H popped his quad again at New Year's Revolution, so they were going to do Cena and Taker was a possibility.
Yep.
And if Cena ended the streak, then forget about it. It would have been friggin' the apocalypse. I think the world would have caved into itself if that happened.
When Taker Batista went on in the middle of the show, I think that threw up some flags too, people thinking Batista was going to end the streak. So, yeah, I guess I got to disagree with you a little bit there. I don't think it was that obvious. I think more people were pissed that Shawn didn't win in San Antonio. A lot of people felt he deserved the win at that point more than Taker. But still a great win for Taker.
Yeah, and what's funny is he ended up getting a title match at WrestleMania anyway. Mm-hmm. So might as well just – yeah, that's the other thing. But So number 13, Taker in 2007.
Number 12 is a guy we actually initially had a lot higher, but then the more we studied the Rumble, the more he dropped, and that's Rey Mysterio in 2006. Of course, he has a longevity record, went at number 2. And lasted the whole time. But if you really look at it, he doesn't eliminate that many guys, and a lot of the match was spent hanging around on the floor, on the mat, and not doing much. That whole Rumble was filled with that. Not the best Rumble. I think that was the one where Patterson was away or sick or something, and he wasn't able to really help them book it.
You can clearly tell that, too.
Yeah, it was a mess. And Ray, you know, he holds the record, which was good for them at the time because they got it off Benoit, obviously. So, you know, it ended up being a good move, but the match itself is blah, and Ray would end up, yes, he won the title, but it was a convoluted road to get there. So, I think I can't really put him above any of the other ones we have.
No, I agree. It was a good performance, but unfortunately, you know, Triple H is in that bullying mode, and then he got eliminated, and then, of course, Orton, he'd eliminate Orton. And then the whole thing got all weird because then Ray lost the title shot at No Way Out. Mm-hmm. They pulled the whole thing like they did in 02, and then I think they did it in 2000. They did it in 2000. They throw the wrench in the mix sometimes with that, with the whole losing the title shot at No Way Out, and then between No Way Out and WrestleMania, they do some kind of loop-de-loop. But yeah, overall, I mean, winning at number 2 is nothing to sneeze at, which is why he is at number 12. But yeah, the match itself is not great. I don't remember that Rumble being very loaded either. Seemed like the roster was a little.
No, it did. They had some guys in there, but it was just. Yeah. I mean, him or Triple H were obviously the two major, and Orton were like the three guys. A lot of were kind of pegged.
Yeah, exactly. At number 11 is the one that my PIC saw firsthand, and that was the tie in Providence with Bret the Hitman Hart and the Total Package Lex Luger. Obviously, going into 1994, they didn't know what the hell to do.
Nope.
And I'll give you the floor on this one because you obviously felt it firsthand because you're the one that pretty much decided who was gonna you and the rest of the 18,000 plus at the future dunk would decide who it mattered more to or who was gonna get the edge in the end. And of course, you gave that edge to Bret. But when that originally happened, you guys all shit all over it.
We were annoyed because it never happened to that point, and we felt kind of blah at the end. It's like, all right, we didn't even get a winner. But when you look back, I can see what they're trying to do. And those were the two top dogs at the time. So, you know, they had a pretty good brawl leading into that final minute when they fell over. And it was near perfect the way they fell over. And Bret obviously would parlay it to winning the world title. It was a setup for WrestleMania 10, which was phenomenal, which is why I kind of ranked this a little bit higher too. And I thought the Rumble itself was very good. You had Bret coming in off the knee injury, which also helped sell it, and Luger looked pretty good. He eliminated a bunch of guys. So I think they deserve to be right outside the top 10, even though it was the tie. I still think it was a good Rumble with and the two of them were pretty good. Either of those guys could have been legitimate winners, I guess is my point.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they weren't sure where to go, and in the end, you know, in the end, the fans, my PIC included, went with Brett.
Okay. So. Let's hit the top 10 now.
Yep.
Number 10, we go to 1990 in Orlando for Hulk Hogan. Had a lot of eliminations that year.
Yes.
Very good appearance. The crowd was hot for him. Of course, that is the infamous Mr. Perfect was maybe supposed to win the Rumble, but Hogan ended up usurping it. But you also got to factor in the Hogan Warrior showdown in the middle of the match that led to WrestleMania 6. So a lot going on there. Hogan was really the early version of the dominant guy in the Rumble. So this was his first win of the two. And it was an impressive performance for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people kind of use history and how Hogan is now to kind of crap on this performance in particular. But really, if you leave it as a standalone, it is one of the better Rumble performances and led, obviously, to the big to the ultimate challenge at one of yours and my favorite shows of all time. And that is, of course, WrestleMania 6. At number 9, we go to Fresno 2005 for Batista's win. He eliminated a good amount of guys, and of course there was all the controversy at the end. Him and Cena fell at the same time, and then Vince popped both his quads, and the whole thing was such a fucking disaster.
It was
in the
great Rumble, though.
Yeah, no, it was a very good, very entertaining, a lot of action. Remember the infamous Muhammad Hassan gets thrown out by everybody, and it was
fun. Raw SmackDown playing off the West Side Story thing, where they showed down, have the showdown in the middle of the ring.
Yes,
the two sides, and there was a lot going on in that Rumble, and of course it came down to Batista, Cena, the two guys being set up to be the future going into Mania, and of course Batista was just so over at this point.
Yeah, he was.
And that led to the great face turn where he powerbombed Triple H through the table and then won the title at WrestleMania. So very deserving to be here at number 9.
Yes. Yep, I concur.
All right, number 8, we go to 1998, and that is Steve Austin's second of his three Royal Rumble wins. Yep. This one was definitely one of the more anticlimactic wins where everyone expected it, but they didn't make it bad because everyone wanted it. And if they didn't give it to you, then you really would have felt hosed because everyone was just dying for him to win this Rumble and go on to WrestleMania to fight for the title. So the whole match is just built around basically can anyone take out Austin? That was the whole match. And when, of course, he comes out and his music hits, everyone turns around and faces the aisle and he comes in from the back and lays them all out. So he didn't actually eliminate a ton of guys. He came in kind of late, but the enormity of the match and the position he was in carries it to this point.
Yeah, there's not much more to say here. Again, it was one everybody wanted. I remember going to a Raw. I believe it was the go-home Raw. It was out of the week before that in New Haven, and that was the infamous where he first started paging in the pre-cell phone years, paging 316 on everyone's pager. So my brother and I used to page each other all the time 316, and that was one of my favorite Raws of all time. It was like stunned. It was like a stunner buffet. Stunned Jarrett twice. He stunned Shamrock. It was crazy. So I mean, everybody and their mother knew that he was going to win this thing. It was just a question of the road to it. Rock had a good performance in that Rumble too, but it would be Stone Cold eliminating him and winning, and of course went on to Boston to beat Shawn Michaels for the title. At number 7, we go to the second of Shawn Michaels' two Royal Rumble wins, and this was Fresno in 1996. Came in late and ended up eliminating his boy Diesel with a super kick. This Rumble was remembered for Triple H came in at number 1 because he lost to Duke the Dumpster, right? Didn't he lose to Duke the Dumpster?
Yes, on the pre-show.
Yep, on the pre-show. So he was in at 1, and I think didn't Duke come in at 30?
Yes, that was the stipulation.
Yeah, so.
And of course, also Vader's debut.
Yeah, and he was a monster, and he threw out like a crap load of guys, and then he got eliminated, and he went back in, and he beat the shit out of more guys.
And he tossed Shawn out, but they didn't. That was one of the years where it didn't matter. It didn't count when a guy who was eliminated someone. So
I think that might be the most annoying.
Yeah, rule. Changes year to year. And eliminating yourself.
Yeah, I know. Like the one year, you know, Savage eliminated himself attacking Jake or attacking somebody. It was so weird.
Yeah, crazy steps. But yeah, Shawn. That's another one like Austin in 98 where it was pretty obvious he was going to win.
Yeah.
Coming off the injury angle and all that stuff. So, all right. We are now into the top six? Yes.
Yep.
At number 6, we go to 1993 for Yokozuna's win. Mm-hmm. Came in late, but eliminated a bunch of guys. Fended off the spot where everyone tries to gang up on him, which they always do with the big guys. Eliminated Savage, ended Backlund's miraculous run. And, of course, would move on to Mania to win the title. So this really set him off on his dominant path throughout 93. So a very good win and a very memorable win.
The only knock on this one is, and it's not his fault, is Savage's stupidity of trying to pin him. Which
right,
was,
yeah. Was a little
and, then Yoko kicks him out, which pretty much kicks him out over the top rope. It was a dumb ending. But, you know, that's not Yoko's fault. Mm. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this is where you really – and that's why hopefully this year he does get inducted into the Hall of Fame, and this is right. The beginning of that Hall of Fame career. Huge win. He was a monster heel, great personality, great presence. And he gets the big win here in Sacramento to move on to WrestleMania 9. And, of course, he did beat Bret Hart and then lost and the rest of that disaster. But here, big win on the big stage, and Yoko parlays it into a championship. All right, we are in the top five. And at number five, we have an impressive win in a less-than-impressive setting. And that was Shawn Michaels' first Royal Rumble win at the Sun Dome in Tampa in 1995. The reason it's less than impressive is for two reasons. Number one, it was only 30-something minutes. And number two, the other 29 guys were the biggest bunch of stiffs that you ever saw in your life, most of them anyway. But still, though, Shawn with the great ending where it took a lot of athletic presence to make sure that both feet did not hit the floor because a camera was there. So if he did it, it would have caused a major problem. And then eliminated Bulldog. Did you really feel – now, we mentioned that Shawn was almost a gimme in 96, but you remember this better than I do. Did you feel Shawn was a gimme in 95?
Not completely, but probably. It was. I mean, I think Bulldog was a legitimate possibility. I don't remember being that shocked when he won. A little surprised, but not that shocked. And Luger was always a possibility too, but those were really the only three guys,
right.
Especially once Owen and Backlund went out that quickly.
Yes, exactly. But
Michaels eliminated 7.5 guys at that show.
Yes, didn't he take out Mabel or took out some big dude,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Combo guy. So, no, very impressive performance. You know, the only knock on it is it's short because that was the year that was only a minute each, and you're dealing with guys like friggin' Dick Murdoch.
Yeah, it wasn't an impressive field.
No, it was a bunch of stiffs. But
still a great win for him in his first one.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, he parlayed that to a great title match at WrestleMania. Did not win. He lost to Diesel, but still one of the greatest matches. Well, PWI voted it match of the year. Mm-hmm. I think you and I have it at the top of our list on our year in review that year. That it was probably the best match of the year. So talent-wise and entertainment-wise, we were given something very special, but of course he did not win the title.
All right, top four. We go to 1991. Yep. Hulk Hogan's second win eliminated 7 guys, pretty dominant fashion, and he ended up eliminating Earthquake to finish that feud off to end the match, went on to 7 and defeated Slaughter. Just a classic win, another one of those ones you kind of associate with the Rumble. You know, Hogan, you say what you want about him, but his two Rumbles were pretty impressive. And this is one like Steve, as we'll say, in 1998, where everyone kind of wanted him to win at this point. 90, yeah. You kind of wanted someone else to maybe win it, but here you wanted him to win to take out Slaughter. So
right.
Hogan in 91 checks in at number four.
Yes. At number three is almost like the illegitimate win, but one of the most, probably his most dominating performance of the three.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we go to the Alamo Dome in San Antonio for Steve Austin's first Rumble win in 1997. He was in there for, Jesus, like 40-something minutes. He eliminated like 7-8 guys, but of course was eliminated himself. For those that don't totally remember, let me lay the scene out for you. Mankind is eliminated by Terry Funk. Then Funk is eliminated. And the two of them just start absolutely beating the crap out of each other in the corner on the outside. Well, the two referees on the outside go over there and break the fight up. Meanwhile, Bret Hart eliminates Steve Austin on the other side of the ring. Well, Steve, who's no dope, realized that nobody saw it. So he went back in the ring where the last three guys, which were Undertaker, Vader, and Bret, were brawling. Undertaker and Vader are brawling near the rope. Stone Cold eliminates the two of them. Bret had just eliminated, I think it was Fake Diesel? Somebody, some big dude, eliminated
him.
Yeah,
Fake Diesel, yeah.
Yeah, it was Fake Diesel. And then all of a sudden, Stone Cold walks behind him and just dumps him over the top rope.
Yep.
So this would be the only time in history that no title match came from a Rumble win. Now, John Cena, we mentioned in 08, used it at No Way Out instead, but this is the first time that no title match came from the Rumble since 1993. Of course, they'd have the Fatal 4-Way match because they kind of vacated his title. They gave it to him, and it's in the record.
That was technically for the title.
Yeah, and
Final Four.
The last four guys, the last four guys wrestled again. Of course, that was that great match where Vader's eye almost falls out of his face. Bret wins the match, and then, of course, loses to Sid the next night, so. But even though it didn't...
Dominating performance. He tossed a ton of guys. It was his Rumble.
Yep.
you know, you remember the thing with him checking his watch as guys are coming out and just running through guys in the beginning.
Yep.
And then the whole his face when Brett comes out was tremendous and just good stuff. Good stuff. So, all right. Top two, another one where you could go either way, but in our eyes, there's only one way to go. So number two, we go to 2004 for Chris Benoit going the distance. Great story. No one ever thought he'd win the big one in the WWE, but he finally did. Paul Heyman has stacked the deck against him. He enters number one. Doesn't have a ton of eliminations, but enough. I mean, he's
right.
He had six actually. So yeah, he did have a good deal of eliminations. And of course, something I just read recently that I never really picked up on at the time. Mm-hmm. They really set the stage for him to eliminate Big Show at the end because he eliminates all the monsters throughout the match, like all the bigger guys. And it showed that he could do it. And then at the end, he eliminates Big Show to win it. And I remember not even until the last, when Big Show hit the floor, did I actually believe Benoit was going to win. Even I thought they were going to do something screwy and have Big Show win, honestly, because he was being pushed pretty strongly at the end of 03. But that, you know, they do that cool elimination where he's like dragging him over the top rope and finally throws him out. Just a kind of a storybook finish for Benoit heading into WrestleMania. Just a guy they never thought was going to finally break through. And he has this epic, epic Rumble performance.
Yes, that was this actually. Remember, very special moment because that was the first pay-per-view that you and I watched together.
Yes.
We all watched together. We had our we did our little numbers game, which you'll be doing this weekend. Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous performance. Heyman, who was the GM of SmackDown, was giving him a lot of guff. You'll never win the
big one.
A lot of guff. You never win. You never will. And that was that. But he went into that at number one, lasted, I believe, 61 and a half minutes. And then won the match, and of course, a word I'm using a lot tonight, parlayed the win into, of course, winning the triple threat at the Garden at WrestleMania 20 to become World Heavyweight Champion. And another show you and I were at. So, yeah, an incredible incredible match for him and a great – actually, really good Rumble. I remember really liking it with Kane freaking out over the Taker music and then Brock's distracting Goldberg and Goldberg getting eliminated. Overall, really a fun, fun Rumble, one of my favorites. But – I think it's indisputable who the number one greatest Rumble winner of all time. And then
for so long, you and me. It has been for so long since we've heard this.
That's right. It has been quite a while. Indeed, almost 2 years worth of pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Over 2 years worth of pay-per-views. Yep. Of course, for those that are long time, first time, PTB Nation listeners, you of course know when you hear that music, I'm only speaking of one person. The greatest Royal Rumble winner of all time, and that is, of course, the Nature Boy Ric Flair in 1992 at Knickerbocker Arena in Albany. He came in at number three, 59 minutes and 26 seconds, eliminated six or seven guys. And, of course, threw out Sid at the end after Sid was getting shafted by the... Kind of reminds me. That was... I get a little teary-eyed when I hear that because that reminds us of the first real great... the great performance of Jason Greenhouse putting together a very nice, very nice mural on our
PT. I will
say
this. Jason Greenhouse has something great in the works.
He does. Oh, very looking forward to that. Mm. He always, he's
the
never
whole nation
disappointed.
Should. The whole nation should. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's not just a picture. It's something cool that we're going to be doing. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Ah, super. Excellent. Again, Flair, and of course, he won the, and of course, he didn't just win the title shot. He won the title that night, of course.
Yeah, you'll never top it. I mean, coming in at number three, Heenan on commentary. Flair was very active throughout the whole Rumble. A lot of great individual stories, the stuff with Piper.
The awesome promo at the end.
Yep, and then the finish where he almost wins by accident and no one can believe it. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, he did it. This guy did it. And then it made sense because he always said he was the man to beat the man. You got to be the man and the 60-minute man. And he did it. He went out there and went 60 minutes and won the Rumble. And the first really defining Rumble performance in the history of the event. So very deserving number one.
And Mean Gene saying, put that cigarette out during the post-game promo. So there you have it. We rank the 24 Royal Rumble winners.
There's actually a great thread on the Facebook page tonight. I believe Mr. Greenhouse started it. Oh, I don't want to screw it up. Yes, it was Mr. Greenhouse. Said he was going to watch Rumble 92 tonight. And then it started a little thread of quotes from the show. So check that out.
Oh, very nice. It's a superb performance. Yeah, it's a great performance for Ric Flair, and mm-hmm. the first legitimate Rumble win. Obviously, the first ones were just for show. This one was the big one. So congrats to Ric Flair, mm-hmm. number one on the PTB list, greatest Rumble winners of all time.
Okay. I'm going to break down this last list, see if I can get everything right.
Okay.
What we did for this final list was build the ultimate all-time Royal Rumble. What we did was we went through every Rumble and every number and picked a participant that entered at that number at some point in Rumble history. And the key was you could only use what each guy wants. And we based it on longevity and eliminations mainly. So we went 1 through 30. We picked the best number 1, the best number 2, the best number 3, the best number 4 of all time. Put them in. It's a pretty eclectic field.
Yep.
A couple of funny ones in there. So what we're asking you to do, PTB Nation, as a thank you for us delivering this third show for you this week, late on a Friday night, as we're about to both pass out. We want you to book this Rumble for us. Who would win? Who would get the Jesus push? Who would get the Speedy Gonzalez push thrown out the quickest? Who would eliminate the most guys? Who would be next to last? Book it for us. Tell us who would have won with this all-star studded field. So we're going to alternate one. We're going to start at number one, just like a real Rumble, and we're just going to read down who we have in the year, from what year their appearance was, and we'll give the stats as well. So, yes. Scott, why don't you kick us off with number one?
All right. Obviously, coming in at number one will be Chris Benoit from 2004. He was in for 61 minutes and 30 seconds with 6 eliminations.
And, of course, won the whole thing.
And won the whole thing, yes.
Entering at number two to the Royal Rumble is Rey Mysterio from 2006, went 62 minutes and 12 seconds, eliminated 6 guys. Most of that time was laying around on the floor, but he did win the Rumble, and he enters. He was definitely easily the best number two in our Rumble history.
Yes. So the two of them will brawl. Mm-hmm. Then coming in at number three.
No shock.
No shock. Ric Flair from 1992, 59 minutes, 26 seconds, 4 eliminations, and he spent a lot of time getting his ass kicked, mm-hmm. but just did not get eliminated. Did not get eliminated. And, of course, won the thing.
And number four, we have the first guy in here that did not win a Rumble, but still had a great performance. And that is The Rock from 1998. Went 51 minutes and 32 seconds, only 2 eliminations. But this was kind of his coming out party. Late 97, he was starting to build some momentum, build some heat. But this was the first time where you kind of looked at him as a legitimate player. He wrestled earlier in the show, and then he comes in at number four, and he's the last guy thrown out. So, in his kind of... A little hinting of his ongoing, never-ending feud with Steve Austin that was to come.
Yes. And speaking of the aforementioned Stone Cold, he is our number five participant. From his win in 1997, he was in for 45 minutes and 7 seconds and 10 eliminations. Mm-hmm. I didn't even remember. When we put this together, I didn't even remember it was that many. Yeah. I knew it was a lot, but I didn't think it was that many.
A beast showing in that Rumble. And that was a pretty good field. I mean, there was a lot of junk in there, but some pretty good guys.
Yes.
All right. And number six, we have possibly the most dominant performance by a guy who's never won the Rumble or wasn't a winner, and that is Kane from 2001, 53-46, 11 eliminations. And you and I were actually talking about this, how they kind of wasted that, because after that show, he really didn't do much for a while. But he looked like a monster, legitimately, in that Rumble. This ran through everyone. And I remember watching it after I got the tape with my roommate at the time, who was kind of wasn't really a wrestling fan. He'd watch it every now and then with us. And he got really into this Rumble, and I remember him going along, and I was asking him who he thought was going to win, and he had Kane the whole way. That's how dominating that performance was.
Yeah.
So there you go. Number six, Kane from 01.
Yes. Number seven on the list is one of my PIC's personal favorites, and that is, of course, well, because he took part in it, and that was Big Daddy Cool Diesel from 1994. He was only in for 17 minutes and 41 seconds, but 7 eliminations. Eliminations in 17 minutes. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You do go by the law of averages.
Yeah, he chucked a lot of guys out. And, of course, it was the run that turned his career around.
Yes. Yep.
All right, number eight, we have another winner. That is Randy Orton from 2009, 48-23, but only 2 eliminations, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Not the most impressive winner of all time, but still a pretty good run to go from number eight to win it all.
Yes. Now we're going to get to some of our funnier ones, mm-hmm. some of the kookier ones. At number nine... These are some of the ones you definitely don't remember. At number nine, the greatest number nine of all time, is the Big Boss Man, ironically.
Well, we must specify. Not necessarily the greatest. We might have had to do some juggling because each guy can only appear once. So there might have been better number nines, but those guys had to be used elsewhere. So
yeah.
This is the best possible number nine.
Possible number nine is the Big Boss Man from 2000. He was in for 22 minutes and 47 seconds. He only eliminated two guys. But, you know, in a Rumble where the roster was not
right
that great, it's a pretty good performance.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, number 10, we have Ted DiBiase Jr. And he actually makes it, and his dad doesn't in this list.
I know.
2009 lasted 45-10, only one elimination, but he hung in there, helped Orton win it, and a good run for a young guy.
Yes. Yep. At number 11, we have Carlito, who came in at number 11 in 2006, lasted 38 minutes and 29 seconds, had just two eliminations, but a pretty good performance for 2006, and maybe he wasn't lying around as much as Ray was, but he... an impressive performance for number 11.
All right, number 12, we go to 2003 for Rob Van Dam. Lasted 32-56, one elimination, but it was hanging around there towards the end. Was still pretty over at that point.
Yeah.
So it was the best possible 12 we had.
Yes. This one may not seem as impressive, but it was the only one at number 13 that was eligible based on our
Yeah, but I thought, I mean, time-wise and elimination-wise, it's not impressive number-wise, but when you look at the performance itself, I'd say it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and that is Vader, who came in at number 13 in 1997. He was only in for 11 minutes and 4 seconds, but he did have four eliminations.
Should be.
Oh, that's a typo. My bad. Okay, 1996, 11 minutes and 4 seconds and four eliminations, mm-hmm. but he was a monster. And then he came back in and started beating the crap out of guys even more. So.
Yeah, and that was, of course, his debut, and he just ran through guys. And I'll never forget him unceremoniously dumping Doug Gilbert.
Vince would say. Yeah, Doug Gilbert landed with a thud. So.
Yeah, so a great, memorable performance by Vader there.
Yes.
All right, number 14, we got a 1991 for the British Bulldog, his return to the promotion, his first pay-per-view in a couple years. 36-43, three eliminations. He was in there at the end, one of the last four. So a good comeback for the Bulldog. In his first, like, really go-around as a singles guy.
Exactly. And, of course, he would, guess what? Parlay it. Into a great year-long feud with the Warlord. At number 15, do I see a trend here? At number 15, we have another one of your favorites, and that is the Beast from the East, from Asbury Park. Of course, talking about Bam Bam Bigelow in 1994, 30 minutes and 12 seconds, and four eliminations.
Yeah, great run in that one. And, of course, the memorable elimination is when he press slams Doink out to the floor and, kind of, well, I was going to say ends that feud, but not really because they fought at WrestleMania. But it was a pretty nasty bump Doink took. But
after watching the match at WrestleMania, you wished it ended the feud.
Yes.
So.
All right, number 16, we go to The Undertaker in 2009, 32-27, four eliminations. I don't really remember that. Kind of undescript. But.
Yeah, it was undescript. But we couldn't use this 2007 because we had the other one, our number 30 might have been slightly better. At number 17, we have the late, great, and hopefully future Hall of Famer, Owen Hart. The King of Hearts came in 1996, lasted 20 minutes and 43 seconds, two eliminations. And really, this is one of those ones where there was a better 17 we couldn't use. There really wasn't a lot of good 17s. He was pretty much the best of the bunch
there. Yeah, and he had a solid. I mean, that was probably the peak of his heat as a heel at that point.
Yeah.
Coming off the whole thing with Shawn in November and all that. So, and they would have the... their match the next month. And speaking of Shawn, in that same Rumble, number 18, his win, 26-09, seven eliminations. Another great performance from him. He won the whole thing. His comeback off the injury. So,
yeah, and I believe he is the only wrestler in history to win the Rumble in the teens.
Right? Yeah, probably.
I don't think anyone's run a Rumble in the teens. I think they've either won in the single digits or in the 20s. So. At number 19, our number 19 is Kurt Angle, who came in at number 19 in 2004, lasted 29 minutes and 4 seconds, but just one elimination. But he beat the hell out of a lot of guys in that Rumble. I forgot who eliminated him, but...
That was Sean dumped him, didn't he?
In 04?
No, that was the next year. I forget who dumped him. Goldberg?
Maybe. Goldberg was...
Or he dumped Goldberg. When Brock
That's
came
right.
Out,
he
right.
He came from behind when Brock came out and distracted him. That's right. Okay.
All right. For number 20, maybe the funniest one here, is Greg Valentine from 1994. 20 minutes, 39 seconds, no eliminations. Of course, this is kind of a comeback. Just popped in for this Rumble and popped back out. But there were no better 20s we had available. So the Hammer the master of the long, lengthy match gets a showing here. I think he deserves a spot. He was in a lot of those early Rumbles.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. The greatest guy we have coming in at number 21 is another guy that needed a spot here, and that's, of course, the Macho Man Randy Savage, future Hall of Famer again. 1992, 22 minutes, 26 seconds, two eliminations. But it's not just that. I mean, obviously, he beat the crap out of Jake, and he was all over the place, and he was one of the last four. So definitely a superb performance. Maybe the best performance. Although it was 89.
His 89 was solid, too.
Was pretty good, too. But I think we had somebody else in his slot that was a little better. So we have him penciled in at number 21. It was a good performance. Solid.
And just going back to Kurt, he was eliminated by the Big Show in 04.
Okay.
All right, number 22, we got 2002 for Triple H, the eventual winner, 23-14, five eliminations. I think we've talked enough about that. Probably.
Talked enough about that one, yep. At number 23, we go to 1994 again. Well, we use 1994 a lot, huh? A lot of good performances in that Rumble.
There were a lot of guys hung around for a while in that one.
Yeah, and the co-winner, Lex Luger, who lasted 21 minutes, 58 seconds, and five eliminations. And as mentioned, he co-won it, but then did not get a win out of it at WrestleMania. He lost to Yokozuna.
All right, number 24, it's Hulk Hogan, as the kid yells as he's entering in 1991. 1955, seven eliminations, his most dominating performance, his best performance. So he enters
yes.
there. We fucked up.
Oh, I forgot to change this. Shoot.
Do you know who the original guy was?
You know what? We got – who was the new we had to put in a different number, 30.
Oh, it was? I thought – so 25 didn't change?
25 didn't change. Because I think 25s was more impressive. Well, you know what? We're going to put these two in. And...
No, let's hang on. Vamp for a minute.
Okay.
Tell us how the match is going. I'll try and find out who we had.
Okay. Let's see. Undertaker is still in. And Chris Benoit and Ric Flair are still fighting in the corner. Ray's already been eliminated. Rock and Austin are fighting in the other corner. Kane and Diesel, just a lot of pairing offs here. Boss Man has eliminated Orton. Carlito and Ted DiBiase are fighting in the near the ropes. Rob Van Dam eliminated himself by frog splashing Vader. Vader gets back in the ring, eliminates the Bulldog. Meanwhile, Bam Bam Bigelow is arguing with Doink on the outside. And wait a minute! Oh, The Rock just got eliminated. Rock eliminated. But Flair came from behind and dumped out Austin. Can you believe that? Flair and Benoit continue to brawl in the corner. There's Shawn Michaels coming in at number 18. But Kurt Angle, who's in at 19, comes in early and attacks him. So they're brawling on the outside. Oh, my God, McMahon. And look at the hammer. Looking in good shape, the hammer, making his big comeback. Shut up, McMahon. And
all right. I'm going to change number 25.
Okay.
Because I found one that we should give. I think this guy deserves to be in there.
Okay.
And that is Mr. Perfect from 2002. Lasted 15-18. I don't think he eliminated anyone, but it was a great comeback. No one expected him to show up at, you know, ever come back to the promotion after WCW folded, and he did, and that was a great nostalgia run, and the pop he got, the run he had, ended up getting him hired back with the company, so.
15-18. You know what, that was one of the ones I remember when we were putting together this, that was one that I was going to keep, and then I realized that I had put...
We could just say it was the blank spot of Bash and Booger in 1994.
Yes, or Savage in 1991, yes, exactly.
Well, that was actually 25, though, Booger.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So. All right. At number 26. Well, that was supposed. To, I was supposed to have 25. So
okay.
26
so 26 is from 1994 once again, and that is Rick the Model Martel. 11-22, one elimination. Of course, his epic run came back in 91, but it coincided with another guy that we had to put in earlier. So, the model with a great showing again in 94, and he deserved to be on this list. One of the early Rumble stalwarts. I think he was in like 8 straight or something to start.
Yes, and was always in for a long time too. So always impressive. All right, at number 27, another future winner, or a winner from this spot, and that was the aforementioned Yokozuna in 1993, 14 minutes, 53 seconds, but seven eliminations. So he had an elimination almost every 90 seconds. Very dominating performance for Yoko.
Yep. Number 28, another winner, Batista in 2005, 10-54, four eliminations.
Yep. At number 29, probably the best elimination per time,
yes,
in terms of average, and that is Sid Justice in 1992. He was only in for 5 minutes and 55 seconds, but eliminated 5 guys. So he eliminated a guy every minute. That's pretty good.
And at number 30, making his surprise return to the Royal Rumbles, John Cena in 2008, 8-27, 4 eliminations.
Yes. Some surprise names we don't have on here. No Mick Foley.
No Bret Hart.
No Bret Hart. Yeah, that's a shocker.
Well, his win in 94 came at 27. And that was really his most impressive one. Warrior. But Warrior never really had a great Rumble run.
No, and Brett really either, because Brett was always on the undercard in a title match or something. So he wasn't in many Rumbles because he was defending the title in most of them. So.
No Eddie.
No Eddie.
Rock. I mean, he was only in a couple, though.
Yeah.
Tito. He was another guy in a lot of them early.
In a lot of them, yeah. Morocco, I guess. Snuka was in a few. No Piper.
Nope, no Piper.
Well, Piper wasn't in many, though. If you think about it, he was in 92. Was he in 93? No, he was gone by then.
All right, so I'm going to give the Nation a couple challenges. One, we want you to book and pick your winners for this Rumble, who would win and all that stuff.
Yep.
Also, if you can come up with a different rearrangement, feel free to post your version of this. If you can,
yes.
If you want to change the numbers around and have some guys enter at different spots, and if you think there's better options, go through it and do it. It's a lot of fun to debate. So
yes. All right, just to give everyone a chance, we'll quickly buzz through it very quickly, so in case you missed any.
I'm going to do it in the Vince.
Oh, well, please. Okay.
I'll do it right in order for everyone.
Doing the music in the background?
Oh, I'm doing the music.
There we go. Okay.
It's time to rumble. It's time for the Royal Rumble. This year's entrants, Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio, Ric Flair, The Rock, Steve Austin, Kane, Diesel, Randy Orton, The Big Boss Man, Ted DiBiase Jr., and Carlito, Rob Van Dam, Vader, The British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, Bam Bam Bigelow, The Undertaker, Owen Hart, Shawn Michaels, and Kurt Angle, Greg Valentine, Randy Savage, and Triple H, The Narcissist, Lex Luger, Hulk Hogan, John Cena, Rick Martel, Yokozuna, Batista, Sid Justice, Haku, Mr. Perfect, and Adam Bomb. It's the Royal Rumble.
An Adam Bomb.
Adam Bomb has a lovely voice.
And Haku.
you gotta get Haku in there.
You gotta get Haku in there.
And Axe. Smash.
Yes. And who else, Lord Alfred? Kato.
And Sato.
So there you go. PTB Nation, a little project for you. Book that for us. Tell us what you think. I'm interested to see what it's almost like, you know, like when they branched off to the separate promotions, our WWE Australian Tag Team Champions, yes. Michael McDonald and Dave Hall.
Yeah.
Touring what was Dave Hall's town again?
Tombiambi.
Ambiambi. So. And then Michael McDonald says what? Chuka no.
Wandonga.
Wandonga, that's yes. It. Wandonga. So,
don't hate us if we fucked it up.
Yeah, I know. Please cut us. Yeah.
All right. So we hope you enjoyed this little special treat for you this weekend. I'm going to post this immediately, actually, so you have the whole weekend to get into the Rumble mode and post your lists and get into it. Remember to get your picks in. We're starting anew on the board. Bigelow34@proboards.com. Go ahead and get your picks for the Rumble in there. And of course, we're going to have the Rumble chat on the Facebook page this Sunday night. So we're looking forward to that. We'll be back next week with some headlines and. I guess SummerSlam 1995, right? Should be an interesting show to talk about, I'm sure. So.
Yes.
Yep. With that, Scott, it's been a long week, so I'm done talking to you until next Wednesday, hopefully. So
yes.
with that said, PTB yes. Nation, thank you for all your greatness you've delivered this past week between the episode 100 and the Facebook page has been out of control, which has been so much fun to see everything going. And, of course, stay tuned for the Jason Greenhouse special announcement coming soon. So with that said, for the last time this week, that is Scott Criscolo. I am Justin Rosero. Enjoy your weekend.
Peace. Number one fan. Don't open my mouth, let her talk some